Welcome to Politicus, the only podcast that discusses politics and public service from the Portuguese-American perspective. Here, we discuss everything from federal policy, local issues, and U.S.-Portugal relations with the goal of driving more discussion and awareness of the issues affecting our nation, our community, and what we as Portuguese-Americans can do about it. And now, Politicus. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Politicus. My name is Angela Simoes, and I am here with my most esteemed co-host, Dinesh Borges. How are you, Dinesh?
I am here and fabulous because it is truly an honor and one of the most accomplishment things I've done in the world, which is be co-host of Politicus with you, Angela.
Well, thank you. Thank you. And hopefully our listeners feel the same way as far as being able to enjoy these conversations. Our guest today is Rui Pereira. He is the mayor of Wickenburg in Arizona, but also honorary consul of Portugal for Arizona and for the southern region, or southern, southern region, if you will. So welcome, Rui.
Thank you, Angela. It's a pleasure to be here with you and Denise, and just to talk a little bit about anything you want to talk about.
Well, let's start by giving our listeners a little bit of your background. You know, it's funny, when the census numbers came out and it shows that there's growing populations in places like Texas and Arizona and Colorado, you know, everyone says, how do Portuguese people end up in those places? So how did you end up in Arizona and you're currently mayor? And then we can also touch on how you became honorary consul at some point, but why don't we just get started with your background?
Of course. So I was born in Portugal, born in northern Portugal in a town called Esposende. And my parents immigrated to the Boston area when I was a teenager. And so I lived in Boston for about 10 or 12 years. And then after school, I ended up working for a software company, and that took me all over the Western Hemisphere. And I traveled quite a bit through the United States, the Caribbean, South America, and so on. And on one of those business trips, I ended up meeting my future wife on a business trip you're going to laugh at this one. We met in Aruba, and on the beach in Aruba. And she was from Arizona. And, you know, I was getting tired of the cold winters in Massachusetts, and Arizona sounded fantastic. So one thing led to another, and she invited me to come and live in Arizona. And I took the chance, and we both used to work in the hotel business. And we ended up in Wickenburg, Arizona. Initially, I moved to Phoenix, but then we ended up in Wickenburg because Kathy, my wife, became the general manager of a dude ranch here in Wickenburg. And so we ended up moving here, and we've stayed here. We've been here since 1995, and we've enjoyed every moment here in Wickenburg. It's a small town. It reminds me very much of where I grew up in northern Portugal, because it was also a small town. So I enjoy the small community atmospheres where everybody knows everybody, and you can go to the grocery store and say hello to 20 different people that you know, and just get to know everybody. So I enjoy the small town atmosphere that Wickenburg has. So that's why we stayed here.
Nice. Yeah. And so tell us about your path to becoming mayor.
Well, so for me, I've always enjoyed politics, enjoyed the political world, and actually, when we first moved to Wickenburg, I said to Kathy, I said, you know, someday I'm going to get involved in the political scene here in Wickenburg and help guide the town into the future. So when I had the opportunity to, for a long time, I traveled. My job took me all over the place. So I was traveling a lot, so I couldn't really dedicate a lot of time to much except job and family. But once I was able to not travel anymore, I decided I'm going to run for town council. So I did that in 2008, I decided to run for town council. And I was lucky enough to be able to win a seat. And then a few years later, I decided to run for mayor and became mayor. I've been mayor now for about on my seventh year. And actually, after this, once this term ends, which ends in December, this coming December, I am retiring from politics. I've decided that I've spent enough time involved in the political world here in Wickenburg, and I've decided to retire from being mayor at the end of this year.
Wow. That's a big decision.
It is a big decision. It was a tough one because I really enjoyed. We've done some really great things here in the town. The town has grown. Is in great shape, both financially and for future growth. And there's lots of great opportunities here. And but it's time for somebody else to come in and have some new thoughts, some new ideas, and how to continue growing the community.
Right. So tell us a little bit about, I guess, the demographics of Wickenburg and then some of the maybe issues that you've had to work on or, you know, things that have been important to the community there.
Yeah, so Wickenburg was founded back in the late 1800s by Henry Wickenburg. He was a prospector, German prospector. He discovered the gold in an area called Vulture Mine. And he at one point operated the richest gold mine in the area on the western side of the United States. And then when all the gold was gone, people moved on to other places to find gold. But Wickenburg continued to grow. And Wickenburg is actually at one point, Wickenburg was actually was considered to become the capital of Arizona until Phoenix took over and became the capital. But Wickenburg also provided a large agricultural community as well, and was able to furnish a lot of the food and so on for Phoenix to thrive and grow. So Phoenix grew out of a lot of the agriculture that was going on here in Wickenburg. But that also ended when there was a major flood here back in the early 1900s. There was a major flood here that destroyed the town and destroyed a lot of the farming that was going on here, and farming never came back. But Dude Ranches came back. So do you know what a Dude Ranch is?
Yeah. Oh, well, you can work about rounding up some cattle, and
you got it exactly. So some guys had the vision of creating Dude Ranches here. At one point, Wickenburg was known as the Dude Ranch capital of the world, and so we had like 40 different Dude Ranches operating here. Today we have three left that are still in operation. But that's what really continued to grow the community was through hospitality and dude ranching. And it's always had the Western atmosphere, so cowboy Western, and continues to be that way today. And it's, so we work very hard on preserving that tradition. And that's what we continue to do on a daily basis. And that's really one of the things that attracted me to the town as well, was the Western hospitality that exists here. And I grew up watching and John Wayne and all those guys, all the Western movies. So for me, this was a perfect fit. Yeah. So, but it's a retirement community. It's also become a retirement community. So my demographics is, we're somewhere around 60% of our residents are retirees. And then there's a mix of other small families here as well, but primarily a retirement community. And that's how we thrive, is through retirement, or being a retirement community. This is a lot of snowbirds. Wickenburg grows to, we have about on an annual, our census says that we have about 8,000 people live here year round. But in the summer, in the winter time, when the snowbirds come back, we swell to about 20,000, somewhere around that area.
One quick question: retirement community. When you say it's about 60%, by the way, Angela, you're going to fit in. You need to go down there because I saw you. Social media with a cowboy hat, so you're ready. But other than that, so you have the cowboy hat, you have the initial what's necessary. But who, in all seriousness, the aspect of the 60%, 60+% retirement community, of course, we have that in certain parts of other so-called Sunbelt states.
Right.
Does that pose challenges in because as we get older, I'm 65, and so I know now the issues of healthcare. as we get older, there's of course more healthcare issues. Does that pose any healthcare issues as far as what I mean healthcare as far as services for a retirement community, for a community that's 60+%? And I ask that in a double kind of a question to get your experience on that as mayor of the town and resident, and also because that's happening in many regions, not many, but a few regions of Portugal, especially in the Azores Islands, where more and more people are returning, but they're retirees, and it sometimes puts a burden on healthcare. What are your thoughts?
Absolutely, Denise. You touched on that. Actually, it poses not just the health, not just healthcare challenge, but also employment challenge. That makes it very difficult for us to find staff to staff the hospital, to staff the medical offices, to staff, but to be able to provide the you know, the physical therapy office where you go and get physical therapy. So it becomes a very difficult challenge. And then the other issue that it causes for us is that because of the demographic and also because of the value of the homes that are being built here, causes an issue where with affordable housing as well for to be able to recruit staffing to provide all those services that you mentioned, medical services. So we have a tough time recruiting teachers. We have a tough time recruiting police officers. We have a tough time recruiting nurses for the hospital, doctors for the hospital. So it's challenging when it becomes a predominantly senior community because we don't have the base to be able to find staff to do all that work.
Yeah, indeed. That's happening in some communities in Florida. And it's happening in some small communities in mainland Portugal, the interior ones.
Yeah, we're working very hard one of our goals for the town council here is we are working to build more what we call workforce housing, and that's our number one challenge right now is having workforce housing or what's called attainable housing, which is someone that's making $75,000 or $80,000 a year can afford to buy a home.
So yeah, I was going to ask, what are some of the things that you're doing to attract the type of workers that you need? So the housing is one of them. Anything else that you can highlight?
So over the last couple of years, we've had to, as the town itself, we've had to look at how we pay our employees and how do we compare to other communities of our size, and are we paying them a fair wage? So over the last 3-4 years, we've actually increased the hourly rates to all of our employees. In some cases, some employees got an increase of up to 50%. Some got up to 25% to bring them up to the level that communities like our size are paying their employees as well. So it's forced us to be able to make sure that we are paying a salary that is comparable to our community, so we don't lose. One of the things that was happening, Angela, is we were actually losing some of our employees to our neighboring communities because they were paying them a lot better than we were paying them.
Oh, wow.
So we ended up. So we had to look at our base pay and see and increase that to make sure that we were keeping staff around and we didn't have to retrain them. So it cost us a little bit of money to bring them all up to a level that they should be at. It also saved us because we don't have to go retrain employees every time we lose an employee, especially when you lose a police officer. To mm-hmm. retrain a police officer, it's very, very, very expensive.
Right. So let's move over to your role as honorary consul. I know that there is a small but growing community, Portuguese mm-hmm. community, throughout the state. Can you tell us a little bit about, where are Portuguese people in Arizona? What's bringing them to Arizona? And how did you come to be the honorary consul?
Absolutely. So, yeah, you know, you're right. So our community here has grown. When I first moved here back in 1992 or 93, I mean, it was hard to find another Portuguese person here. I couldn't find anybody that I looked and couldn't find anyone that's Portuguese. So I felt like I was the lone Portuguese person in Arizona. But not too long after that, we started discovering that there's actually quite a few more Portuguese. And what's brought them here is quite a few are actually retirees as well. They've decided to retire in Arizona. So, and quite a few have come from California. Not as many from Northern California, but mostly from Southern California. So Artesia, we have quite a few people that used to live in Artesia have moved here to Arizona, and they all know each other from Artesia. And then the other one that we also have is a lot of people from New Jersey that have moved here from New Jersey. Because what happened was a relative ended up moving here for work or something, and then all of a sudden they've invited all their friends or cousins or uncles and aunts to move out here as well. So the community has continued to grow quite a bit. We estimate that right now somewhere in Arizona we have somewhere around between 4,000 to 6,000 Portuguese people, either Portuguese natives or descendants of Portuguese. our Facebook page right now, we have somewhere near a thousand people that are connected to our Portuguese in Arizona Facebook page. And that's really how we have kind of grown quite a bit. Is actually like about 5 years ago or so, I created a page called Portuguese in Arizona, and all of a sudden, boom, we just started finding all these Portuguese. And we've done some gatherings as well. Some we've brought the community together where we've had potluck dinners at someone's house, and everybody brought their favorite dish, we all shared our favorite dishes with everyone. And then for a while there was we also had a restaurant here, an Italian restaurant actually that was owned by a Portuguese family, and we would gather there because they would prepare Portuguese dinners for us. But they have since sold the restaurant, and no more Portuguese dinners at the restaurant anymore. But that's how we used to get together, and we're in the process right now of looking at planning a gathering sometime coming up in the next couple months, and just bring everybody together again.
It's amazing the effect that social media has had, both positive and negative effects, bringing people together in this way has been very positive, because, you know, before Facebook or any social media site, there really was no way to connect with each other without being in person, right? So now people actually have a place to at least have conversation online. So, and I'm curious, what is it that people are most looking for? Is it just, you know, kind of reminiscing about the foods they used to have, or just connecting with like-minded or like-cultured people? What is it that you find people are craving the most?
Actually, it's the food. So one of the top questions on our page is, where can we find bacalhau?
online.
That's, no, exactly. And I point them. So most of the time, I point them to the store. And they used to be in Artesia. It's now in, I think somewhere in down further south. But that's where I point people to, or order from Jersey, one of the stores in Jersey or in Massachusetts. So, but yeah, where can I find bacalhau? The food is the number one request. And recently we've had people asking about starting to do some festas and like they were used to in California and in Jersey and in Massachusetts and so on. So, but to answer one of the questions, one of the things that you asked earlier is, you know, where are the Portuguese here in Arizona? Well, one of the challenges that we face with our community here is that we're all spread out so far away from each other. So, you know, so I live up in a town called Wickenburg. And Wickenburg, we're about from downtown Phoenix, it's about an hour, depending on the traffic, an hour and 15 minutes. And then a lot of our other residents, a lot of other Portuguese are either in the East Valley, which is in Chandler or Gilbert, and then some are in the West Valley in Buckeye and Peoria and so on. And that takes, it's hard to get everybody together because it's quite a bit of a drive for people to get to a central location. And like I said, we've done it before, but it presents a challenge to get everybody together that way.
Right. We found that the similar situations in places like Texas and Colorado, and we've had a few people, you know, reach out to us to say, can you help me start a Portuguese club where I'm at? And, you know, starting a Portuguese club the way that we've done them, you know, in parts of California or in the East Coast, it's a lot of work, and I don't know that formula would actually work even if there was a concentrated group in a particular city. And by the way, I just wanted to say that according to the 2020 census, there's actually a lot more Portuguese in Arizona than you thought, Rui.
Oh, there are?
There's 19,963. Yeah. So we have to put some ads in newspapers throughout the state saying, join this Facebook group so we can all connect, right?
No kidding. I knew the number was probably higher, but 19,000. Wow.
Okay. Yeah. Now, of course, those are people that probably have other ethnicities as well. But these are people who are proud enough and willing to write down that they have Portuguese ancestry on the census. So, you know, it's funny. Well, I was curious too, is there a willingness to move around and have the get-togethers in different states, or not different states, different parts of the state?
Absolutely. No, we've done it. Like I said, we've done it in, uh, uh, we got together in Tempe, we got together in Bacay, we've gotten together in other places. So it just the numbers shrink a little bit every time you go too far away from one end of the area to the other end. So, but typically, when we do a gathering, we typically have anywhere from between 50 to 75 people show up, and then the word spreads, and then the next time we have a little bit more people. So it's depending on how busy people are.
And so, go ahead, Dinesh.
I was going to ask, just the issue is when you surprised with a number of Portuguese descendants in your states, in Arizona. The same thing is happening in a different way in California, and that is that's a challenge for, I think, the Arizona's facing a challenge that we'll face here. Probably we already are, but we'll face certainly in a different manner, I would say, within the next 20 years, which is right now, according to the same census, as Angela knows, there are Portuguese in over 500 cities in California. And if you 45, 50 years ago, there were Portuguese in maybe 60 or 70 cities in California, maybe a little bit more. But the idea that your parents were born in Sacramento and you had to be raised and you had lived in Sacramento like your parents did for the rest of your life, that idea is long gone in today's young professionals, in today's folks who are between, I would say, the ages of 25 and 50. And that's even going to be more and more with colleges, with I see it at the level here in Fresno State, where we have some of the Portuguese students that I get are not traditional Portuguese students here from the Valley. They're from Sacramento. They're from Danville. They're from Southern California. And so that is going to be a bit more of a challenge. So I think that anything that you kind of pioneer in an area like Arizona, because these are folks who, like you said, have migrated. They're not folks that came from Portugal directly to Arizona. I'm sure there's a few of those, but not many. The majority are folks who've migrated from the East Coast or from the West Coast or from other parts of the country to Arizona. So anything that you kind of do is going to be kind of a way for the future for the Portuguese-American communities, even in these strong areas that we typically look at as strongholds of the Portuguese-American world, whether it be Artesia, Tulare, San Jose. Yeah. Lord knows that San Jose has changed tremendously from 30 years ago. And so it's going to be interesting to see what you can and the community there can develop, because I believe it will tell us what we kind of need to do, maybe not now, but we need to prepare for 20 or 25 years.
Yeah. No, I agree, Denise. I think it's going to be, like I said, a few people have asked about doing the festas, like Espírito Santo and all that kind of stuff, but it's hard. It's going to be hard for us to put something like that together here. But what I think we can do, though, is we can definitely create a club where we can centralize some things and do some things centrally and do some of the dinners that are very popular and have people come in and celebrate the culture and also enjoy some great Portuguese food. But so it's going to be more of a narrowed look at a narrowed celebration versus having all the pomp and circumstance that you do when we have a Festa do Espírito Santo or Santo Antônio or whatever it is. Yeah.
And are you finding also that these are, so you said folks that have come from Artesia and even parts of New Jersey, do they already have Portuguese citizenship, or are you finding that there are some folks that are maybe second or third generation, have found themselves in Arizona, but now with the popularity and there's this movement to reconnect with roots, that there's this surge in wanting to get Portuguese citizenship, perhaps to retire in Portugal or just go there frequently? Have you seen that, and is that kind of a topic that comes up a lot in the groups that you manage?
Absolutely. So we've over the last couple of years, we've had quite a few people reach out. How do I get my Portuguese citizenship? My mother or father were born in Portugal. I'd like to get my Portuguese citizenship. How do I do that? And then, it's become, I probably get an email or a call, probably maybe two or three times a week. I get a call from somebody who wants to get the Portuguese citizenship through their grandparents or their grandma or their parents. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's a popular thing. It's amazing. It's actually amazing how many people are calling, because I think it's either they're discovering, they want to discover their roots and go, or they want to go live in Portugal for a while, or they just want to have that the Portuguese passport, because it's a great passport to have.
Yeah. And so then the role of honorary consul, so you know, natural leader, became the mayor, but then you started this Facebook group. So now you're sort of the mayor of the Portuguese community in Arizona.
that's pretty funny. I hadn't thought about that one.
it's one of those things. You took the initiative to start it, and now you've essentially brought the Arizona Portuguese community together where it had never been before. Is this, so what led to you becoming honorary consul? And secondary question is, what was the impetus for having an honorary consul in Arizona? Is it because there is this growing community, or was there another reason to establish?
So, you know, interesting thing. So the position of honorary consul in Arizona was actually started by my predecessor. He reached out to, I'm trying to remember the consul general before Maria João. What was
Nuno Matias.
Remember? Nuno Matias. He reached out to Nuno. And he and Nuno had several conversations, and he was able to convince Nuno that we needed some representation in Arizona. And then something, I'm not sure exactly what the whole circumstance was when Maria João took over as a consul general, but one day I received a call from her, and she said, Rui, I need to find a new honorary consul for Arizona, and I called a bunch of people, and everyone says that you are the best. You are the best candidate for the position. I'm like, whoa! I hadn't even thought about that. So, in when she called and asked if I would do it, I didn't even think about it. I said, no, it'd be my honor to be honorary consul in Arizona and represent the Portuguese community as much as I can, and help do what I can for the Portuguese in the area. And it turned out to be an interesting. Times, because I've gotten to connect with quite a few more people through the honorary consul. Especially, I've gotten to know many of the other honorary consuls here in Arizona that cover places like France, Germany, Canada, Romania, and Italy, and so on. So we all get together once in a while and talk about different things. But also has opened the doors to other opportunities to see what they do. For example, the French honorary consul just opened the French the French Chamber of Commerce office here in Arizona through their office in Colorado. Got me started to thinking, should we look at doing a Chamber of Commerce for Portugal in Arizona, mm-hmm. and see if we can help develop some business ties here as well. So that's the kind of stuff that's been fun to work on.
Yeah, you think about what would be, beyond getting together and having some good food, what would be, something that would, I guess, is it, like you said, is it business ties? Is it networking? Right. Is it right. Education? Is it, because, it is a lot of work to pull together a network or a group or a club or whatever you're going to pull together and then maintain it, right? It's one thing to sort of get it off the ground, but then you have to maintain it over a number of years, the stamina it takes to do that can be kind of tiring. But you wonder, what is the opportunity there? I'd be curious what you've seen with the French group and what they've been able to accomplish, and with the group that you've interacted with as far as the Portuguese, if they are retirees, are they really looking for business connections, or is this really more about just kind of a social get together? Yeah, I'm just curious how you think that could evolve. And then of course, Halkus is here and is a resource to help and do whatever we can to make that happen if there is the desire to make that happen. But yeah, I'm just curious what more could be there. Is it with education or business? I'm not sure.
But it's interesting that when it comes to a retirement community, I would think it'd be more about the social aspect. And that's what we hear, as you know, when we talk to a lot of the folks in certain parts of Florida, more than others, because in some others, there's actually a growing community with all age groups. But in some communities, there are more tailored to retirement communities in these areas, such as the city where Rui is mayor. It seems like the social aspect is people just want to connect with someone of their cultural ethnicity, whether it's a first, second, or third generation, and you know have a little bit more social gathering, maybe a festa, maybe a dinner, and I don't, and because they're completely out of the other parts of the everyday living.
No, and you're right, Denis. So the number one priority right now is connecting the Portuguese that live in the Phoenix area or in Arizona, and getting them together and really reconnecting and talk about the stories from old Portugal or from places that they came from and where they grew up. But then to answer Angela's question is, you know, what the French Chamber of Commerce has done, they saw a business opportunity here because Arizona, the Arizona economy is growing so much. It has grown so much over the last decade or so, and has brought in quite a few companies from Europe and also companies from Asia. But a lot of companies from Europe are here, based here now, and quite a few companies from there are French have open offices here in Arizona. Quite a few German companies have open offices here in Arizona as well. There's a company here in Arizona today called Amcor that builds semiconductor parts that has an office, that has a factory actually in Vila do Conde in northern Portugal. Mm-hmm. So there's a connection already here between Amcor here in Tempe and Amcor in Vila do Conde. So that's what got me to start thinking, you know, maybe there's an opportunity for a Chamber of Commerce to help continue to develop that business tie back to Portugal. And then the universities here, both universities, the ASU and the U of A down in Tucson, they both have a Portuguese program where they teach Portuguese to anyone wanting to learn to speak Portuguese. So there's a tie there as well between the schools here and maybe schools in Portugal as well.
That's great. And you don't happen to know how many students are in their programs, do you?
I don't at this time. Yeah.
So, you know, one of the things that occurred to me as you were talking about, so really it's kind of more about business connection between the country of Portugal and the state of Arizona. You know, if there's a tech company or other type of company that's looking to establish either a presence in the States or vice versa, a mm-hmm. U.S. company correct. Looking for a particular type of expertise, technology development, manufacturing, that sort of thing. And I think we should do a better job, when I say we, you know, it could be Palkas, it could be us as a community, of highlighting the companies that have that bridge, because I think there are a lot of young people who are either currently in university or graduating or looking for opportunities that, you know, in their career that can keep them connected to Portugal or the Portuguese community. And maybe it's using the language and maybe it's not. But I mean, I can tell you that for me, if I had a list of companies in front of me and I knew that five of them had a manufacturing plant in Portugal or an office in Portugal, and there could be an opportunity for me at some point to go and work there for a few years, those five would be at the top of my list, right?
I'm with you.
Yeah. And so it raises a thought that, you know, we probably should do a better job of promoting those companies that do have a presence in Portugal as a way to give our young people a point of connection, right? Because it doesn't, whenever we think of a point of connection for our young people, it's always on the cultural side. It's always through a festa or through a club or through a school or something like that, right? I think maybe we can do a better job of looking at the business side as well.
Yep. No, absolutely. So one of the items that actually just came to me was ASU also has a study abroad program with in Portugal with the Catholic University, Universidade Católica in Lisbon. So they do a study abroad for, I think, starts in June and ends in August or something like that, and that they offer to their students. Yeah, and so another point. The consulate does these consular visits every year, and for a while there was hard for me to find a place, a location to get to do the consular visits. But last year, through my connection with the honorary consul of the Netherlands, she mentioned to me. She said, "Rui, we use Thunderbird Thunderbird School, which is a part of ASU. And Thunderbird has this great facility downtown in downtown Phoenix. And Thunderbird is their program is world business. So they educate students to become world business leaders and world business focusing on world business. And so last year we held the consular visit at the Thunderbird School, and it was amazing how many kids would come up to me and ask me what's going on, and I then strike a conversation, talk about, you know, we're Portuguese, we're here helping Portuguese the citizens in Arizona get the documentation and so on and so on, and then it led to other conversations about what's Portugal like, where do you mm-hmm. recommend going to Portugal, and so on and so on, because it became, so we're going to do that again in October. We're going to use the Thunderbird School again to do our next consular visit. Will be in October, and that's where we're going to hold it again. So,
well, that's amazing. You have to make sure that you let us know so that we can help promote that. And and you know, it could be a model worth replicating in other areas, right?
Yeah. No, absolutely, especially. So one of the other, so I'm honorary counsel for Arizona, but also New Mexico and Colorado. So I get calls from people from Colorado all the time. I haven't gotten a call yet from New Mexico, but from Colorado, I get lots of calls from Colorado. I get lots of calls from Nevada as well. A lot of Portuguese and quite a few Portuguese in the state of Nevada, especially in Las Vegas. And right. You'd be amazed the last couple of consular visits, people actually drove from Las Vegas all the way to Phoenix to get the Portuguese paperwork done.
Well, I'm not actually not surprised, because we hear stories of people going from California to Florida, or from Boston to Florida, or from, yeah. you know, Florida to New York. I mean, people are willing to travel if wherever they can get an appointment. And I know we're coming up on our time, but I think just another question I have, since you mentioned the consular visits and you get calls all the time, what are the kinds of calls you're getting? And are you able to, I mean, I guess Denise and I already have a lot of insight into this, so I certainly don't want to open up a can of worms. However, if we can show that, listen, these are the types of services needed, we can continue to push to enable honorary consuls to do more. So when you're getting calls from people, what are they asking for? And are you able to help them, or do you always have to kind of refer them to San Francisco or to the embassy?
So a lot of the calls I get is, you know, how do I get my Portuguese citizenship? That's one of the top ones. But then the one that I get a lot is people wanting to have a document notarized, and then that needs to be stamped by the consulate as well, or right. for them to be able to purchase a piece of property in Portugal. Or actually, the latest one, or the very recent one last week, was. Mom passed away in Portugal, mm-hmm. left some land. Now mm-hmm. the land needs to be registered in my name. I've got no, I don't have, I need to send a letter stating that the daughter got married in the U.S., married an American citizen. So they needed to show a document that showed that the name was, you know, let's say the name was Silva, but then her name is now Smith. They needed to show Portuguese authorities that Ana Smith is truly Ana Silva, and that document has to go to San Francisco for the San Francisco to stamp it to confirm that they are truly who they are. Well, that's a process that we as honorary consuls should be able to do that fairly easily. I mean, if we have their authority, we should be able to say, you know, have the right documentation that shows that, you know, marriage certificate and all that kind of stuff that shows that this person is truly this person, and we stamp it and the job is done. Right now, that process takes several weeks, maybe a month, because they have to first get it notarized here. It has to be apostilled by the state of Arizona. From the state of Arizona, then it has to be sent up to San Francisco. San Francisco then sends it back. And by the time all that is done, you're looking at 2, 3, 4 weeks of time. And this person is now frustrated because we couldn't get it done fast enough.
Right. So. And that's if everything... is yeah. expeditious. Sometimes it can take longer, right?
Exactly. Oh no, exactly. You know what? My number one frustration, Angela and Denise, and I'm sure Denise probably has the same thing, is, and I've said this to Pedro Pinto, our consul general. I said, you know, every time I send an email to the consulate, you know, coming from someone like an honorary consul, that email should be a priority email. You know, we're mm-hmm. trying to help you, save you some time, so respond to that email. Sometimes I have to send an email twice, three times, four times before I can get a response. And sometimes I have to go to Pedro and say, Pedro, I've sent this email four times now. Can somebody please respond to this email? And then Pedro, of course, does his best to get it done. And I'm sure he's frustrated as well. But it's very frustrating at times to get responses. Yeah.
There are two things. First of all, you're absolutely right. I don't understand why emails aren't answered in a timely manner. And we can, you know, go around with excuses. There's plenty of them to go around. We can always invent one. But there are two things. Like you and our community here, we have a lot of immigrants. We don't have just, you know, of course, first, second, or third generation looking for citizenship. Most of them are already citizens. And it's one of those things that we look for alternatives. When it comes to citizens, I tell folks all the time, use a professional service. And I'm not going to mention anything here because I'm not going to endorse anything that Palkus would endorse. But there are plenty of these services, whether it be the East Coast or the West Coast. They're professional. They'll handle them for you, and they'll do it, you know, within the right amount of time. Second of all, sometimes Portuguese Americans are a bit unfair. I guess that there's unfairness in all ethnicities, not just Portuguese Americans. But they're a bit unfair when I hear people say, well, it took 3.5 years for me from the moment I decided, it took me 3.5 years to get my Portuguese citizenship. Well, it is kind of a popular. I have no idea why I'd sell mine if people wanted to buy it, but you can't sell it. Anyway, because I travel with American passport to Portugal all the time, I've never had any problems. But anyway, I only use my cartão down there locally. Other than that, I travel with my American passport. I still treasure my American passport, and I'm an immigrant. But the other thing is when we become citizens, I remind people all the time, hey, it took me 5 years as someone who came over here with a green card with her parents. It took me 5 years to be eligible to file the paperwork. And then it took another year and a half for me to do the mm-hmm. citizenship. So it took me 6.5 years. So it's not Portugal not being unwelcoming to second or third generation Portuguese. Yeah. It's just bureaucratic process that also exists in the good old United States of America. So we have those things. The other thing is, and because we're in the midst of what's happening in Portugal, and I don't know if folks know about this, but and this would be a topic on itself, but it's just at the heels of it, RTPI just had a journalistic piece on issues with folks who get their citizenship, get their ID, Portuguese ID card renewed, mm-hmm. or their passport renewed. I was one of them in the last 2 years. And they weren't the little form that we filled out that said we wanted to vote in Portugal was not properly scanned or was not properly filled out by the person. And now there are literally thousands and thousands of people who are not eligible to vote because that little piece of paper didn't get submitted the way it was supposed to be. I'm one of them. For the first time in, I think, 20-some years, I'm not going to be able to vote in the Portuguese election.
Every time somebody calls me about to get a citizenship, I always caution them. I always tell them, if you have all the documentation that is required between birth certificates of your parents and birth and so on, it'll take you a year, maybe a year and a half. So be prepared for that kind of work. And then like you, Denise, I also suggest, pay the fee to a professional that will actually help you through this process. This entire process is going to save you a ton of headaches and a ton of time. Pay that professional the money that they ask for, and you'll be better off that way.
Or do it in Portugal if you're going to go visit.
Do it in Portugal if you're going to go visit. Exactly.
someone who did it in Madalena do Pico when they got their citizenship papers all done within 8 months.
That's how I was in Portugal last summer. I got my passport and my credentials done that same day. Well, 2 days later, I went to the registry, filled out the paperwork. 2 days later, 3 days later, I had my cartão cidadão and passport. There you go. So,
yeah. Well, certainly, as many times as we've talked about it, there's still lots of areas to improve the process. But I think what you brought up, Denise, was a great point, right? So me getting my citizenship through Portugal, while it did take a long time, was certainly easier than I think most people go through trying to get U.S. citizenship. So it's a citizen. It's a process, right? You're becoming a citizen of another country. You're not just applying for a driver's license or something like that, which, you know, probably should be harder than it is.
Also. And I understand today is even harder than when I took mine, gosh, you know, almost 40 years ago. So it's much, much, much harder now.
Angela, one quick thing. I mean, I have to say that, you know, things that the consul have, I mean, they takes a long time, but things that the consul have improved somewhat over the last few years. And and through the guidance of Pedro Pinto, Pedro has really, I think Pedro has done quite a bit of work to try to improve things there, and he continues to do so. But I'm sure that his hands are tied as well because of funding. Right. As funding is a big issue for the consulate, and that's why there are challenges. But the things have, although they're still not great, they've improved quite a bit in the last few years.
Right. Any little improvement will take, right?
So Absolutely.
Well, we are going to wrap this up, but thank you so much, Rui, for your time. Congratulations on what you've been able to do down in Wickenburg, and also just throughout the state in gathering the Portuguese folks that are there, gathering them all together. I hope it continues to grow. And really great to connect. And I hope that others are inspired by what you've done. Maybe we can replicate that model of connecting young people with areas of business that are connected to Portugal. I think that would be really fabulous. Any last words, or Denise, any thoughts? Last thoughts?
No, just thank you, Rui. Appreciate it. Thank you so much.
No, it's been my pleasure. I enjoy talking about our community here, and I enjoy everything Portuguese. So I'm happy to always talk about anything Portuguese.
Excellent. Well, thank you both. And thank you everyone out there for listening to another episode of Politicus. If you have not subscribed to the Palcus podcast channel, please do so now and share this episode with family and friends so that more and more people can become part of the conversation and learn about all the different aspects of the Portuguese community throughout the country, and not just in the few pockets that are more well known. Please also leave us a review on iTunes or Spotify or wherever you listen to your podcasts, as it will help others discover this podcast and the other shows that we have. And again, it's really all about growing our audience, growing the awareness, so that we can all become part of the conversation. And so with that, we will say until next time, thank you.
Thank you for listening to Politicus, the official podcast of PALCUS, the Portuguese American Leadership Council of the United States. PALCUS is the premier national organization representing the interests of the Portuguese American community at large. To learn more about PALCUS and how to become a member or to make a donation, visit www.palcus.org. To submit feedback or suggestions about the podcast, email us at palcus@palcus.org. The views and opinions expressed by the hosts and guests of the show are not endorsed by PALCUS.